Hello, this is Sarah with the News Gazette, dated July 24th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Sydney Fun Days, Timely Reminder. Sydney Time Capsule Buried in 1976 to be opened Saturday. By Abisola Dehuntsie. Sydney. 50 years ago, as the nation celebrated its bicentennial, residents of Sydney buried a copper time capsule in front of the local community building, sealing away letters, memories, and snapshot artifacts of 1970s small-town life for future generations to uncover. On Saturday morning, the half-century-old capsule will finally be opened, part of the town's annual Sydney Fun Days celebration. For Donna Hooker, a member of the Sydney Improvement Group, the reveal will be a personal step back into her childhood. Hooker was a third grader in Mrs. Morissette's class when she wrote a letter to be placed inside the vault. "I honestly do not remember what I put in the letter," Hooker said. "I'll be 60 in October. I can't wait to see what I wrote." Hooker said some of her classmates are traveling back to Sydney for the event, including a childhood friend coming from Evansville, Indiana, whose father also contributed to the capsule. The public unveiling is scheduled for 11 a.m. in front of American Legion Post 433, where the old community building once stood. While the original mandate was to unearth the capsule on Independence Day, Village and Legion leaders opted to shift the reveal to match the town's summer festival weekend. "They decided that too many people would be having family cookouts and fireworks on the 4th, said Bill McLean, adjutant for Post 433. "So they had planned Sydney Fun Days for this weekend and decided to do it then." Unearthing an artifact put in the ground in 1976, however, has turned out to be a heavy mechanical undertaking. To ensure the reveal goes smoothly in front of crowds Saturday, a crew quietly excavated the site last week. Beneath a marked granite slab and a concrete vault, workers uncovered an aging outer wooden box, softened by lingering groundwater, housing the sealed copper capsule inside. The capsule itself remains unopened, re-anchored in place under protective cover until Saturday's festivities take place. "We had no idea what was involved in getting that out of the ground," McLean said of the process. "We didn't open the actual capsule. They wanted to do that in front of the people." Among those expected to return for the unsealing are residents who witnessed its burial as children, along with the original master of ceremonies, Mr. Hardman. Following the event, Fun Day's festivities will resume, including a car show, pedal tractor pulls, live music, and food vendors. McLean expects the capsule's contents will eventually be turned over to the village for public display at the new community building. Urbana City Council. Push to restrict surveillance tools returns to agenda. Proposed ban on sale of animal fur goods also up for discussion. By Jana Wiersema. Urbana. An ordinance that would create a formal approval process for police surveillance technology is on the Urbana City Council's agenda yet again. Officials have been discussing the matter since Alderwoman Grace Wilkin and then Alderwoman Jaya Coletti presented an initial draft in December 2024. It is yet to come to a final vote, repeatedly put off for debates, questions, revisions, and other business on the council's plate. Wilkin said at a recent meeting that she hopes to see the council finally make a decision on the ordinance sometime this month, prior to her planned departure. However, since Monday's meeting is a committee of the whole session, no final action is to be taken yet. The meeting was previously set for July 20th, but was delayed due to technical difficulties related to an audio system. The first iteration of the ordinance focused on creating approval, reporting, and policy requirements for surveillance technology used by the police. The current proposal appears to encompass all city departments, though there are still some places where the language only refers to the police department. The ordinance's preamble cites concerns about how surveillance technology can impact civil rights, and civil liberties, and identified a number of groups that could be affected by the use of such tools. The list includes women from other states who seek abortions, asylum seekers, peaceful protesters, and anyone else whose race, national origin, ethnic identity, gender identity, sexual orientation, or other protected demographics place them under potential for additional surveillance. The need for a public process to acquire surveillance technologies is further required because of the likelihood that federal law enforcement agencies will access any data stored by surveillance technology, the ordinance adds. As currently written, the proposed ordinance would require the police department to get approval from the city council in order to use any new surveillance technology or change an existing use policy. Surveillance technology is defined as any device, hardware, or software that is capable of collecting, capturing, recording, retaining, processing, intercepting, analyzing, monitoring, or sharing audio, visual, digital, location, thermal, biometric, associational, or similar information specifically associated with, or capable of being associated with, any identifiable individual or group, or any system, device, or vehicle that is equipped with an electronic surveillance monitoring device, hardware, or software. Automatic license plate readers and aerial drones are included on the list of examples. Exemptions include vehicle and body cameras. At least 30 days before seeking approval of new surveillance technology, the city would have to provide a use report and draft policy for how the technology would be used. Both documents would have to be submitted to the City Council and made publicly available, with community members able to provide input to the Council on the matter. Furthermore, the City would have to create a use report and policy for all surveillance technology currently in use within 120 days of the ordinance's approval, with extensions available. These technologies would then have to go through the same formal approval process as new technologies. Once the City Council decides to approve or deny use of a particular kind of surveillance technology, the matter could be reconsidered after 12 months have passed, or sooner, if there is a demonstrable material change in circumstances that may affect the Council's decision. This could include a relevant change in laws, evidence showing that the technology's use has led to discrimination or some other infringement of individual rights, or the discovery of a previously unknown ability or application of the technology that is inconsistent with the City Council's previous intent in approving or denying the technology. Before repeating the aforementioned approval process, the Council would first have to vote on whether to move forward with reconsidering the specific technology. Additionally, the ordinance provides that the Urbana Police Department may temporarily acquire or use surveillance technology during disaster circumstances for a limited time with the approval from the mayor or their designee. The department would then have to report certain information regarding this use. The ordinance would also require an annual report on surveillance technology to be presented to the Council each year. The report would also be made available to the public. The Civilian Police Review Board shall review each surveillance technology annual report, and use policy of surveillance technology or database subject to this ordinance, with a final vote on the recommendation by the Review Board before moving to the Urbana City Council Committee of the Whole, the ordinance add. Other items on the agenda for Monday's committee session include a proposed ordinance, also sponsored by Wilkin, banning the sale of animal fur products within the city and creating a $300 fine for violations. The ordinance, which provides some exemptions, would go into effect 6 months after its passage. The legislation cites concerns related to animal welfare, public health, and environmental impacts. An application for a packaged liquor license from Sean and Singh Incorporated, doing business as Beverage Genie. The license is for a store at 1506 North Cunningham Avenue. A staff report on the city's housing study. The city announced Wednesday that meetings of the council, as well as city boards and commissions, will not be live streamed on UPTV6 or YouTube until further notice due to the audio system in council chambers being seriously degraded. Our IT department has been working hard with our vendor to resolve this issue, City Clerk Darcy Sandifer told the News Gazette. The plan is to resume streaming on the same platforms as before, with restored audio quality as soon as possible. Videos are and will still be available for playback as usual on the city's YouTube channel. Videos will be available 3 to 5 business days after the actual meeting date. Murder trial. Jury acquits first of two brothers charged in 2025 death. His trial on remaining gun possession charge may be moved to juvenile court. By Luke Taylor. Urbana. A Champaign 18-year-old has been acquitted of murder in a 2025 fatal shooting that led to both him and his brother being charged. Damani Trice's time in court isn't over yet, as he is still facing a gun possession charge that was moved from juvenile court to adult court in tandem with the case involving 4 counts of murder. At the conclusion of his trial, Assistant Public Defender Katie Guifra moved that the gun charge be returned to juvenile court. Assistant State's Attorney Brooke Hinman agreed, but said that the state would be filing a motion to try Trice as an adult in that issue as well. He's due back in court Friday for a hearing on whether he'll be subject to juvenile detention in the meantime. His brother, Dakari Trice, 19, does not yet have a trial scheduled. Beginning Tuesday, Hinman presented evidence which in large part surrounded information found on both brothers' cell phones, as well as surveillance footage from various locations near the scene of the crime. Only one camera captured any part of the crime itself, and it consisted of the sound of numerous shots and what appeared to be muzzle flashes seen distantly before two figures ran away from the scene. Police responded just over 20 minutes later and were eventually able to determine that the incident occurred at 8:01 p.m. on February 7, 2025. When officers arrived, they found Sherman McCraney, 18, of Champaign on the ground with a gunshot wound. Police were able to obtain data from Dakari Trice's phone that appeared to place it in the area of the shooting that evening. Damani Trice did not give the password to his phone, which meant officers were not able to obtain the same amount of data from it. However, a detective presented texts between him and his girlfriend regarding possessing guns, then seeming to become unresponsive during the shooting, then refusing to talk about what had happened by text. A water bottle found on scene had fingerprints and DNA determined to belong to Dakari Trice. All of this, Guifra said, was circumstantial evidence. She said that being located and even having a water bottle in the area, which was within walking distance of Damani Trice's home, did not prove that he had anything to do with the shooting. She also called into question the finer details of evidence, such as the location of the phone, highlighting potential errors using cell towers to locate devices, and the method detectives used. Guifra said that while Damani Trice should not have had guns, that was not what this specific trial was about. She asked the jury not to double the tragedy by wrongly punishing him for a crime he wasn't involved in. Hinman argued that even circumstantial evidence should be considered, and highlighted coincidences between timing and texts, cell phone location, and figures believed to be the Trice brothers captured on surveillance footage. The jury deliberated for nearly 4 hours before returning its verdict. Champaign County Fair, a mix of old and new. Officials made lots of tweaks while keeping traditional favorites. By Abisola DeHuntsie, Urbana. Starting Saturday, the Champaign County Fairgrounds will transform into a whir of carnival goers, the roar of grandstand engines, and the scent of fresh-cut French fries. The 8-day fair kicks off with Military Day, featuring a demolition derby, and closes on August 1st, First Responder Day, with tractor pulls, a goat show, and more. For Fair Board member Ed Clem, the event remains a nostalgic bridge to his youth, even as new attractions draw younger crowds. "I loved going through all the livestock displays and everything," Clem said, reflecting on his childhood visits to the fair. "The rides are amazing, but there will be a lot of displays in Kessler Hall. They still judge the best cookies and the best pie, just like on the Andy Griffith Show." Clem noted that while agricultural displays remain at the root of the fair, simple carnival traditions hold a special place for returning visitors. For any first-time attendees, however, Clem recommends prioritizing Culler's French fries. The beloved fry stand has been a Champaign favorite and fair tradition for over 80 years. This year's schedule brings noticeable updates designed to boost participation and streamline events. Previously, the Queen and Little Miss pageant would be held the Sunday before the fair, before any of the rides were set up, but this year's event will be held Monday night in the grandstand. "We changed a lot of things out here," Board President Terry Lemke said. "Hopefully for the better, and we wanted people to actually be here for that during the fair." The week-long lineup features a wide array of grandstand and arena programming, including a Western horse show Sunday morning and a draft horse show that night. There will be harness racing on Tuesday, monster trucks on Wednesday, a rodeo on Thursday, motocross on Friday, and tractor pulls all day Saturday. The farm's petting zoo will feature animals like rabbits, goats, and miniature horses for younger kids to enjoy. Near the Memorial Park entrance, a section of the fair designed to honor deceased board members, picnic tables will be set up for families to enjoy live performances on the newly updated stage. One of the newest attractions is a custom truck show, which is expected to draw between 50 and 100 vehicles featuring custom lifts and lighting displays. Organizers have renovated the seating layout to improve comfort during hot summer days, reducing the capacity in individual boxes from 6 to 5 chairs. "Keep in mind it's July, and it's typically 100 degrees out," Lemke said. "We do have fans that move air, but it's moving hot air. Removing a chair gives people a little more room to walk and get around." Image 1 is a picture of stuffed animals that are prizes at the carnival games. Image 2, longtime game operator Stephen Williford handles a tarp while setting up his balloon game. Image 3, one of the harness racing horses whips its head out of its stable to say hello. Food and Drug Administration. New outbreak involving cyclospora reported, but officials are keeping quiet on most of the details. By Laura Unger, the Associated Press. Federal health officials are investigating a new outbreak involving the diarrhea-causing parasite Cyclospora. The outbreak included 72 people as of Wednesday. The Food and Drug Administration has not yet identified which products are linked to the illnesses. Officials also have not said where the cases are located. This is an active investigation, and officials are working together to determine the specific cause of illness in this cluster, the Department of Health and Human Services said in an email Thursday. Federal officials earlier this week said they remained focused on lettuce from Taylor Farms as the source of a separate multi-state outbreak. The company last week announced that it was recalling iceberg lettuce grown in central Mexico. Cyclospora is a microscopic parasite that infects food that has come into contact with human feces, most commonly when produce is irrigated or washed with contaminated water. When ingested, the parasite causes intestinal illness marked by frequent and sometimes explosive bowel movements, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Federal and state health authorities have been investigating separate clusters of cyclospora illnesses, including the one traced to Taylor Farms. Food safety tips include washing hands with soap and water after using the bathroom and before handling food. Experts say cooking can kill the parasite and advise cooking produce to a temperature of at least 158 degrees Fahrenheit. Minnesota murders. Killer of lawmaker, her spouse gets life sentences. Minneapolis. Friends and family of Minnesota Democratic lawmaker Melissa Hortman said the man sentenced Thursday to 2 life terms plus 40 years after pleading guilty to her murder failed to eliminate her legacy, but caused enduring fear and fury as he changed their lives forever. Fellow lawmakers and survivors of the shooting spoke Thursday at the sentencing hearing for Vance Bolter, the man who pleaded guilty last month to federal charges related to the killing of former House Speaker Hortman and her husband, Mark, as well as critically wounding State Senator John Hoffman and his wife, Yvette. Bolter, 59, agreed to plead guilty in June, almost a year after the Minneapolis area attacks, so federal prosecutors would not seek the death penalty. Mark Hortman's father and siblings voiced anger that he could not be sentenced to death. U.S. District Judge John R. Tunheim said it was the longest sentence I have imposed after hearing thousands of cases over the years, but I do believe it is deserved. In court Thursday, Senator Hoffman said he and his family are constantly reminded of the extraordinary violence of that night, even in the mundane details of day-to-day life. He said they don't receive mail at home anymore. They have installed solid steel doors for protection, and they have changed how they do everyday tasks because of their injuries. The defendant looked me in the eyes and pulled the trigger. The defendant looked at my wife and chose to do the same, Hoffman said. History. Area history. In 1926, after a week and a half, the strike of the Building Trades Council has been called off, and work on the new library at the University of Illinois will start back up. All of the council's demands were granted. The strike began when the Reliable Heating and Plumbing Company breached its contract by placing non-union steam fitters on the job. That company has been removed from the contract, and the union workers will now work directly for the university. In 1976, the Assistants Union, an organization of university graduate teaching and research assistants, has begun a drive to increase its membership from 300 to 1,000 members by December. The university hires about 3,000 graduate assistants during the regular school year. The union is planning to set up a booth in the south foyer of the Illini Union to recruit new members and to survey graduate assistants to determine what items should be included in a collective bargaining contract with the university. Such a contract is the major goal of the union. In 2011, it's been 20 days since Toby Brown's sweet corn received any measurable rain, and the nights are not providing enough relief from heat either. The lack of rain and the heat has really affected the patches going through pollination and ear fill, said Brown. As for the earlier planted corn that should have been ready to pick and sell this week, without anything, a rain or even dew, the plant is so depleted of moisture, it's just not sellable anymore, he said. The Champaign area has received 0.43 of an inch of rain in July. The normal for the month is 4.7 inches, according to the to Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. With much of the month over, it's going to be hard to catch up to that normal level. International history. Today's highlight. On July 24, 1969, the Apollo 11 astronauts, two of whom were the first humans to set foot on the moon, splashed down safely in the Pacific. On this date in 1567, Mary, Queen of Scots, was forced to abdicate her throne to her one-year-old son, James. On this date in 1847, Mormon leader Brigham Young and his followers arrived in the Salt Lake Valley in present-day Utah. On this date in 1866, Tennessee became the first state to be readmitted to the Union after the Civil War. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today. Courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with, on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversations in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@news-gazette.com. Longtime Champaign resident Caitlin Bryan has become a mainstay at Goldie's 2.0, serving up drinks for about a decade now. I started as a cook, but saw where the real money was, Bryan said, of the choice to get into bartending. She also works full-time in billing for a trucking company. Bryan said folks should come to Goldie's for the laid-back, inclusive environment with some of the best drink prices in town. We have something for everyone. Bingo, pool, music, food, gambling, she said. Our beer garden has not just one, but two carports for your shading needs. She loves serving up anything in a can. No mixing required. But she'll probably just have an iced tea herself. I had to retire vodka, Caitlin, because she had a little too much fun, Bryan said. The best thing about bartending is the customers, in her opinion. Coincidentally, that is also the worst thing about bartending. As far as a favorite memory of her time at Goldie's, she said, it's an if you know, you know kind of situation. My favorite memory is going home to drink in my closet. Daybook Almanac. There are 160 days left in the year. Notable birthdays. Actor Dan Hedaya is 86. Actor Chris Sarandon is 84. Actor Robert Hayes is 79. Actor Michael Richards is 77. Actor Linda Carter is 75. Movie director Gus Van Sant is 74. Country singer Pam Tillis is 69. Basketball Hall of Famer Karl Malone is 63. Retired MLB All-Star Barry Bonds is 62. Actor Kadeem Hardison is 61. Actor-singer Kristen Chenoweth is 58. Actor Laura Layton is 58. Actor-singer Jennifer Lopez is 57. Director Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman, is 55. Actor Eric Zamata is 51. Actor Rose Byrne is 47. Country singer Jared Neiman is 47. Actor Elizabeth Moss is 44. Actor Anna Paquin is 44. Former NHL center Patrice Bergeron is 41. Actor Mara Wilson is 39. Actor Kaylee Spaney is 28. TV personality Bindi Irwin is 28. Actor Dylan Hoffman is 18. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.